The Feast of Fools is brought to you by listeners like you. Getting a t-shirt from us helps to pay for our production costs. Thank you for your support. Today's show is also brought to you by Showtime.
Showtime presents a killer new series, Dexter. The Chicago Sun-Times says it's
fantastic, a classic in the making,
and
one of the fall's best new shows.
And you can see it for free.
Watch Dexter Sunday 10/9 Central on Showtime, part of the Showtime free preview.
I've really got very little to say to people like Clay Aiken because they're sitting pretty already. They're wealthy. They're powerful. These are not the people who are going to lead our civil rights movement any more than the Clarence Thomases are going to lead the civil rights movement for African Americans.
You're listening to the podcast that entertains you by any means necessary, The Feast of Fools. On today's show, we'll be talking to gay activist Andy Thayer of the Gay Liberation Network about Matthew Shepard's brutal death and how it's affected people everywhere, the fight for gay rights in Iran with Sam Kosha of the Persian Gay Lesbian Organization, and Republican Mark Foley's sexless sex scandal. All this and more on today's Feast of Fools. Stay tuned. We're listening to music from Violent Nine. The song is Yell It Out from their new album, Any Wonder, available on our website, feastoffools.net. Oh, I'm Fausto Furnos. So our guest today is the fantastic Andy Thayer, who is a local scenester in the gay and lesbian activism.
Spinster?
Scenester, okay. Not spinster. You're not there yet.
Working on it.
You're working on it. And now it's gay Andy Thayer. I'm sorry, that was a little
redundant.
Subconscious thing. Is part of the Gay Liberation
Network.
Network, GLN, and which is an organization you helped start.
Back in 1998, actually just a few weeks before the murder of Wyoming's Matthew Shepard, we had had a series of gay bashings right here in Chicago, one of them just 100 feet away from the Town Hall police station, the heart of the gay community.
Well, people get mugged all the time, don't they?
That's right. Actually, an overwhelming percentage of the anti-gay hate crimes happen right in the vicinity of Halsted Street because apparently that's where bashers think they can go to beat up gay people.
Well, it's also, if you really want to go beat up gay people, you're going to go where you can find them.
Absolutely. People are going to be much more out of the closet on Halsted Street. But back in 1998, we had these three severe gay bashings, one of which nearly killed someone. And we felt that the existing organizations, let alone the politicians, weren't doing enough about it. And that's why we formed what became GLN as a direct action organization, because we felt it's not enough to just simply say gay hate is bad or violence is bad. You have to go to the root of it. And when you've got the federal government, you got so many politicians, religious leaders, etc., saying that gay people, lesbians, bis, and transsexuals don't, transgender people don't deserve equal legal rights, well, that gives license to those who use violence against us. I mean, we looked at the history.
But do you really think, like, the guys who beat up Matthew Shepard were sort of like reading the paper that day and said, you know, because my state representative doesn't support gay rights, I'm going to go out and kick some butt.
No, but it's very interesting you should raise it. I think it's part of the overall social climate, but I don't think it's any accident that a year before Matthew Shepard's murder, that a Wyoming state legislator on the floor of their legislature said that gay people should be treated like gay bulls and sent off to rendering plants. So...
It was like Pamplona and running free through the streets.
No, not quite like that. But I think when
you've
got...
That's what a gay pride parade sort of feels like to me, is like the bulls of Pamplona, you know, running down and like killing everybody. But it's like killing them with love, of course.
Absolutely.
But so this Friday and Saturday, there's a couple of actions and happenings here in Chicago to sort of remember and acknowledge the passing of Matthew Shepard.
Absolutely. On Friday night, we're bringing in Sam Kosha, who's on the board of the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization. He's based out of Toronto, but they're an Iranian gay and lesbian organization fighting for equal rights for gay people in Iran. And he's going to be coming in and speaking at a reception we're having at the Gerber Hart Library, which is 1127 West Granville, 7 to 9 p.m. And on Saturday night, we've got our 8th annual Matthew Shepard March, which Sam is also going to be speaking at, as well as WVON's Cliff Kelly and a number of other folks. That's going to be at 8 p.m. at the corner of Halsted and Roscoe, Gay Central, the 7-Eleven parking lot, and we're going to be having
a short
rally.
Where all the young chicken hangs out anyways. Mm. All the young gays and lesbians like to hang out at the 7-Eleven parking lot because they can't get into the gay bars, so...
There you go, and we're going to be marching out of the gay community into the Wrigleyville, you know, quote unquote straight bar district.
That's
to send
gutsy.
Our message out there. Well, we did it during, right after the Cubs lost a playoff game a few years ago.
Ooh.
And the cops were saying, "Oh, don't do this. Don't do this." Is it? We've
so
got
depressed.
The permit.
The straight people are unhappy and so you got all, how many people was that?
Oh, that was probably about 750, maybe 100,000 people, and we marched right up Clark Street, right past Wrigley Field, as it turns out. And,
but I mean,
didn't
aren't straight people like, you know, they're pretty much used to looking at gay people walking down the street at this point.
Yeah, well, it was more than that. A lot of people were applauding us. There was one lunatic drunk who tried to attack us, but aside from that one individual, everyone was literally applauding us as we were going up the street with our openly gay banners saying things like equal marriage rights and, you know, gay marriage is our right and, you know, civil rights,
et cetera. We recruit.
We don't need to. There's plenty of us out there
already. We don't
need
to. Yeah, there's plenty of it. But, you know, sometimes... You know, you see a hot straight guy on that street. You know, there's some really good-looking men that come out of that baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they let
they're closeted.
They may be closeted or not, but it's like, you know, you admire their beauty. As I said, it's like, I might not necessarily want to have sex with a straight guy because he's not going to know what to do.
Right, exactly.
But I can admire his beauty.
Yeah, well, I've got enough heterosexual female friends who are always complaining that all the beautiful ones are gay, and I think...
No, they just don't want to sleep with you.
Right. No, good-looking women.
They are?
I can say that objectively.
Okay, so I know this is sort of a naive question. Well, I know the answer to this, but a lot of people are scratching their heads at home. Who is Matthew Shepard, and why are we organizing... An event to remember this individual, because he was a young kid, right?
Yeah, he was a college student in Wyoming. He was brutally murdered, hung out to die on a fence in Wyoming near Cheyenne. It was a brutally cold night. He lingered for many days, and then he died. It was a graphically anti-gay hate crime. Now, it was one of many hate crimes against gay people, some much more brutal than that, and that's something that we emphasize over and over again. But for whatever reason, people organized around the country in that October of 1998. People literally flooded out into the streets right around the nation. Right here in Chicago, we had over six Matthew Shepard vigils and marches within the first month after his murder. So it really galvanized our community and our allies. And this was right at the height of the so-called Republican Revolution. It really, you know, kicked both the Republicans as well as many Democrats back on their heels, and it raised the issue of anti-gay violence onto the national consciousness for many years. Now, there had been
And why do you think that happened?
Because people came out into the streets. That's
but
how
why,
you get.
Why was people so reacting to, you know, because gay people get killed all the time in this country,
right? Right.
And why Matthew Shepard, and why do you think Matthew Shepard had such a emotional response from the public?
Well, part of it was the first successful example of internet organizing, frankly, in the world. It really was. The internet was in its infancy, but people paid much more attention to email messages back then. When they got a message about this, a friend of mine in Washington, D.C., John Arafosis, was very involved with this, helping spread the word about what happened. And people paid much more attention to their emails back then, for one, and it was
so. Then again, as much spam in those days.
Exactly, and it really was. It touched a chord because I think a lot of people are also very sick and tired of the Republican Revolution. I mean, Newt Gingrich was riding high in the saddle.
Look where he is today.
Yeah, exactly. Probably divorcing.
Not even Candace Gingrich can have a career. Yeah. And she's a lesbian. It's like...
But it's very interesting, Fausto, because you had, within 6 months after that, you had over 1,000 gay straight alliances in the nation's schools, whereas at the time of Shepard's murder, there were a half dozen. It spurred young LGBT folk to organize. Teenagers. They were sick and tired of taking it into the schools, and they organized themselves. And that's the value of these kind of public protests and marches. I mean, you don't have to even look at our own movement. I mean, the role in the civil rights movement in the 1960s, that's how people won a measure of freedom in this country. They certainly didn't vote for it. They weren't even allowed to vote. But they organized, and by their courage and by their willing to put their faces out there in the public on a controversial issue, they won the grudging respect even of openly bigoted people in many respects. They had to say, well, you know, I don't like so-and-so, you know, name your group of people here, but at least they're standing up for themselves.
Well, so in a sense, that is Matthew Shepard sort of the Judy Garland of the modern day?
You might say You might say that. But I think you saw a similar reaction in the organizing against Anita Bryant back in the late 1970s, that we initially lost that battle with Anita Bryant because our community tried to go the electoral road, the judicial road, to winning our rights by trying to pass an equal rights ordinance down in Dade County, Florida, through the back door. The right wing raised a firestorm about this, saying these sneaky homosexual activists are doing this, that, and the other thing. And she rode a wave of hate all the way out to the West Coast until finally they introduced something known as the Briggs Amendment, which basically said that gay people couldn't be teachers, which mobilized not just LGBT folks, but the unions and so forth. And they did a truly grassroots, in-the-streets campaign, and they stopped her, and her career, as a result, went into the toilet.
Well, now she's at Branson, Missouri, doing her one-woman show. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. That sounds predictable. But we did the same thing, very similar, on a smaller scale, with the so-called Dr. Laura Schlesinger. I mean,
her career was on its way out even before she got started. I would say it's sort of like, it's a very easy to claim victory over somebody who's just not that appealing on television. I mean, she was an ugly, ugly person.
Oh, she was an ugly person. But remember, she was the number two radio hostess at the time that she was about to get her
but
television.
But this is the days before podcasting.
Exactly. So you weren't on the air yet.
You're
so
gone.
No competition.
It's like, lady, it's like nobody's listening to. I mean, I would say like really, I would say that podcasting has really sort of killed the right wing radio market. I think Clear Channel pretty much is peeing in their pants.
No, I hope so.
I think so. At least the advertising is going away from that and looking into micro markets.
Yeah.
But back to Dr. Laura, I think, you know, she went on television. And her show, I don't know, did you ever watch it?
I actually did. We organized...
I thought it was terrible.
Well, yeah, it was terrible. But part of it, Fausto, you got to remember, she couldn't play to her shtick, which was the anti-gay stuff. That's how she rose to be number two in the nation. We gave her so much grief over that. We basically quoted her against herself. We launched something known as
Stop Dr. Well, she had those naked pictures of herself.
Yeah, we didn't post those. But StopDrLaura.com was the website we used. We organized protests right around the country.
So you actually organized this?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I didn't know that was you.
Yeah, yeah. The GLN.
I know that website, yeah.
Yeah, and we organized, basically spent that summer traveling around the country doing these these rallies with local folks at $3,000 monthly cell phone bills. It was pretty obscene. Yes, yes. It was not too many years before my bankruptcy at that point. But
so you went bankrupt trying. Let's stop for a second. You went bankrupt trying to bankrupt Dr. Lauren.
The credit cards helped too, but the main thing was that because people organized right around the country. And we basically quoted her against herself. She said that LGBT folks are biological errors, quote unquote. And we quoted her against
where
herself.
Where she's a prime specimen of biology herself.
Thank you.
So she's a pretty homely person. I mean, I thought she was an easy target. I thought she was on her way out.
But you have to take these people on, no. Fausto. I mean, you look at people like Jerry Falwell, you say, gosh, talk about easy targets.
And
large targets, or, you know, Rush Limbaugh for that matter. But until
enormous targets.
People thought, you know, to take an extreme example, people thought that Adolf Hitler was so foolish no one would take him seriously.
And they did.
And the problem is that if you don't politically organize against these people, they will get a hearing because there's certain forces in society which, you know, can make a killing off of various kinds of hate.
So why do you think that, I mean, let's just talk about last year, that march, the Matthew Shepard march, brought in 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to the Gay Pride Parade, which is
Much larger.
Thousand. Where's everybody? Where did they all go? Where is gay activism today, whereas was 10 years? Are gay people too comfortable? Do we need more violence? Do we need more bullshit to get us active?
Well,
Are we too happy?
It's very interesting. I don't think you can talk about LGBT people in the abstract because... Or the public in general. Because what we have found over and over again is actually the degree of consciousness of where things are at and the seriousness of the threat towards our community is actually at its most elevated place, not in places like San Francisco or Boys Town, Chicago or Greenwich Village. It's actually in the red states. I mean, people know what time it is. People know what it's like
in the rural areas, you mean,
to be discriminated against, to be threatened with violence on a regular basis for being out, to not have job protections, the rest of it. And you see, for example, at the Millennium March, whatever you say about the politics of that march, the turnout was disproportionately from the red states. I mean, these are the states where people are having constitutional amendments passed against them saying, you are no longer a citizen of the United States. If you don't have equal legal rights with other folks, you are by definition not a citizen. Citizens are defined as people of, you know, equality with their peers. And I think the LGBT folks and our allies in the red states understand that a lot better than some of us Dissy Queens here in Chicago and so forth. It's sad to say, but people, I think, are really living in a bubble in places like Chicago. And if you look just down the pike around us, this state could, by this time, you know, in a few months, be almost completely surrounded by states that have passed anti-gay constitutional amendments. Hello, are they really going to resist that kind of pressure here in Illinois with that kind of momentum? I think it's an open question, and it's an open question that's going to be answered by whether or not our community mobilizes politically. And so, yes, it is frustrating when you see, you know, a few hundred thousand people at market days or what have you and say, okay, when our community is really under threat, where are these folks? But at the same time...
So the question is, where are they?
Well, I think it's important not to look down our noses at people who are not politically involved, yet all of us were not politically involved at one point or another. So far be it from us to play the hypocrite by saying,
I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just asking where they are.
I think,
do they not choose to be politically active?
Well, I think part of it is that people need to see the possibility for real change. I look at the number of people who were doing equal marriage rights organizing with us just a few years back when it looked like we might actually win it. In right here in Illinois. I mean, they had won at least temporarily in San Francisco, and there was a great deal of pressure on Daley to not only talk about equal marriage rights, but to, actually do something about it by having his county clerk start issuing marriage licenses, but he didn't. But you saw a lot of people in the community who had formerly not been political before getting involved, and unfortunately, when Daley and others slammed the door on us on that issue... people retreated somewhat because they realized this is going to be a many years long fight.
Well, so you're in the sort of, I mean, not describing the word as a business, but you're in the business of getting people out on the streets and getting them politically active.
If it's a business, it's a really poorly
very unlucrative, but in the business, in the sense that's sort of like your purpose in life at this point.
I think that's the way that human progress is made. I mean, I'm a student of history. I look at not sure. just what's happened with our own community. I look at how equal rights progress in general is made, not just in this country but around the world. It's always by people taking matters into their own hands. It's always by people rolling up their sleeves and saying, okay, I'm going to try and make a difference right here in my community.
So what are you saying is that the way to get people politically active is something that's sort of based on what the political atmosphere is at the time, and if people feel like they can actually accomplish something, they're more likely to participate, whereas if the odds seem more against them, they tend to not to get discouraged?
It's not an absolutely linear proposition. I mean, people can feel like our community is completely under siege, and they will sometimes respond due to that. I think that was much the atmosphere at around the time of Matthew Shepard's murder, is that people said, hell, you know, these people are, you know,
don't
completely
fuck with me, fellas.
They're completely shameless. And I think in some of the states where you've seen these constitutional amendment referenda, I mean, we just fought back an attempt to get something on the ballot here in Illinois, and people were flooding into the office to do the petition checking, not just GLN, but a number of other organizations. And, you know, for those of us who were in the thick of it, the amount of person hours that were contributed to that effort over a space of just about a month, month and a half, was probably the second biggest amount of community activism in terms of sheer hours invested by people since the height of the AIDS crisis in this town. I mean, obviously, there's many people still very much involved in that. But
so, how do you get people going in, like, daily? Why are they motivating? What motivates people to be politically active?
Well, sometimes it's the threat. Sometimes it's their personal circumstance. They're just get angry at being treated like dog shit by our politicians and many of our religious leaders. I think it can be anger. It can be they've got a partner and, you know, one of them has got health issues and they're going to wonder what happens to all their assets should one of them die or what have you. I know a number of LGBT folk of retirement age where this is a very real life issue for them. Or they, you know, they have kids, and like heterosexual couples with kids, I mean, hello, why is it many heterosexual couples decide to get married? It's because they've got kids and they want to, you know, provide a legal basis for protecting their kids going forward. There's a lot of people in our own community, particularly in African-American working class communities, where the statistics are that people, LGBT couples living together, are much more likely to be raising kids also. And they want the kind of legal protections for their families that everyone else has that are heterosexual. It's really is a survival issue, as they say, in the African-American community as to whether or not you're going to have some of these legal protections for many of these folks.
So when you're organizing, I guess the reason I'm asking, trying to hammer this question or trying to sort of focus it here, is for people who are trying to organize themselves politically in wherever they're listening to the show in the world, what advice can you give to them on how to motivate their communities to participate?
You have to listen to people first and foremost. You have to see what their concerns are. I mean, if you're not connecting with people, forget it. I mean, you may have your own idea of what's the most important thing, but you really have to be listening to people, and you have to be watching the news to see what the issues are. I mean, you look at this whole Foley thing right now.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I knew you couldn't wait.
I've been salivating since we started.
I was just checking out some of our friends on the far right, their websites, and they're trying to turn this into a whole anti-gay campaign.
They are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there are some delicious quotes. The Illinois Family Institute website, I was just checking it out this morning, and they basically are calling for a purge of all gay people from the Republican Party and the conservative movement in general.
You're pulling out money
I'm
out of your
pulling
wallet.
Out money. I'm, this is not a payoff.
You're trying
here
to pay me
are.
Off. Andy Thayer is a wonderful person. Give me my $20.
Here's a, what are you a pulling single. Out of? This is, I told you this wasn't very remunerative. Quote, this is the time for conservative media outlets, including the blogs, to insist that the Republican Party and the conservative movement stop protecting homosexuals in its ranks. That's post in an article posted on the Illinois Family Institute website.
So it's interesting. The Republicans are attacking themselves.
Well, they're calling for a purge within their ranks. I mean,
get rid of those queers.
Yeah.
I said, you know, more power. If the queers are getting you elected, get rid of them.
I mean, the sad thing is that I mean,
it does. Yeah,
it's an anti-gay attack, Fausto.
Everywhere,
and it was. This is again an extreme analogy, but it reminded me of the reaction back in Weimar Germany when a guy named Ernst Röhm of the Nazi Party was basically outed by the party as a way to basically do a purge within the ranks, the so-called Night of the Long Knives, where they purged a big section of the party. And you had, of course, the Nazi themselves, you know, saying,
are you
this
comparing
guy's gay.
Republicans to Nazis?
No, I am.
That's a difficult comparison to make.
I am
that's a stretch.
Not going that far,
you're
but
pushing
I think some of the same political yes. dynamics where people are making a big deal about a sexual scandal because it is, you know, quote unquote homosexual, as opposed to, I mean, a sex scandal is a sex scandal in terms of, you know,
wherever
you know, minors,
it may be.
Minors are their rights are being violated, and that should be the issue.
Well, see, I feel so bad for Mark Foley, Andy, because unlike Bill Clinton, he didn't even get a blowjob out of it. You know, and he was
that
like,
which we
was,
know.
Well, that what we know of, but I mean, you know, it didn't seem like he didn't get caught with his pants down. There was no blue dress with his sperm on it. No, it was a cheap, lame, instant message conversation that brought him down with a hot 16-year-old lacrosse player from the South. Who ordered the KFC? I did. And, you know, that's the thing that bothers me is that the fact that people are combining pedophilia and gay.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, you know, because the Democrats are also sort of like, you
well,
know, trying
they
to make political gains on the back of the fact that he was just basically chasing after hot young gay guys. And who could blame him? And in Washington, D.C., the legal age of consent is 16, so it's not pedophilia. It yeah. ain't pedophilia if it's legal. It's sexy. It's what
well, the it's thing like, is you didn't see hear the same cries for purging of the
Bill
Catholic
Clinton?
Church. Catholic Church. Remember, where was the Illinois Family Institute during the what was clearly pedophilia?
Where they were going after 10-year-olds, 8-year-olds.
Yeah, and the purge of calling for the purge of conservative Catholic leaders, such as the Archbishop of Boston, during that whole scandal. And that's what makes this thing pretty interesting, because you basically had the Washington Times yesterday calling for not only Foley's head, but Hastert's as well. And that call is being taken up on the far right fringe of the Republican Party over and over again, and they're really trying to emphasize that the quote unquote homosexual angle. I mean, that same article was decrying quote the failure to use the word homosexual in the attacks on
no, because they were too busy saying hot 16-year-old lacrosse players from the South.
I didn't know they played lacrosse in the
South.
He
was playing lacrosse. That was the thing. And you know, the thing was like he was like, get off of me, you creep. It was more like, I miss you too. You know, it was this sort of like flirtation going
right.
back and forth. It was this whole MySpace. You know, I don't know if you're
quite.
On MySpace.
I'm so retrograde.
I think you're cute. Oh, I think you're hot too. You know, and it was just like, it was so stupid. I mean, you know, it's. I just thought it was, you know, I wish he would have gotten, you know, a blowjob and, you know, had this sort of like blue dress thing happening. Instead, it was just, it just is so disappointing. I mean, why
for
can't
him,
we have
anyway.
A good, well, for everybody, you know, I wanted a sexy sex candle and all I got was a stupid instant message.
Aww.
It's just awful, you know, and I think, do you think that gay people are going to be hurting from this in the long run or benefiting from this?
I think we're going to be hurting from it because you've got the far right going, pardon my French, ape shit over the fact that it was, the homosexual angle. Have we ever seen the Democrats truly stick up for our community during on any issue when the Republicans really get up a lather?
Anybody who identifies their freedom with any political party is sort of missing the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're putting the political party first and not their own rights and the rights of their community.
But there's not really a lot of gay, like, the gay Republicans are always so proud of being gay and Republican, but I don't really hear a lot of gay Democrats going, I'm just so proud to love Hillary Clinton. You know, it's like, you just don't hear that. And I said to every person who listens to the show, and there's a lot of gay Republicans out there that enjoy this programming, I'm like, if you're so proud to be a Republican, why don't you put on a t-shirt and march around gay pride parades and see how much love you get from the
crowd? Yeah, well, they were at market days this year.
There were?
They were there, yeah.
But what is the sort of people's reaction to that, you know?
Oh, I think they probably got all sorts of grief about it. But, I look at, for example, all the excuses that the gay Democratic operatives make for their own party. I mean, during the last presidential election, we had John Kerry, the allegedly pro-gay candidate, who was for a constitutional amendment in his own state of Massachusetts to take away equal marriage rights in the one state where we won them. When he was in campaigning in Missouri, he said he was in favor of a constitutional amendment there, which was really the most draconian version of these amendments we've seen around the country. So I'm old enough to remember the Clinton administration. You're not supposed to say
ancient.
That.
Clinton was only like 8 years ago, almost. I'm just ready for the Bush administration to be done. Oh, that's your cell phone.
How I just exciting. Killed it.
But, one thing that I wanted to also point out is that this country really is not very, doesn't really understand the beauty and attraction of the young male. Because we are so happy to have Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera.
Oh, come on. Have you seen any magazine ads? Are you completely blind?
I'm not. Why isn't Justin Timberlake more naked and hot and more young? Why are there like 10 million of... I mean, there's only one Justin Timberlake, but there's always the Christina versus Britney camp. At least there used to be. I don't know anymore. It's sort of like we're sort of moving to understanding why would an older politically powerful person be attracted to a hot 16-year-old lacrosse player from the South. Oh, I just have to stop. Well, we just have to stop this interview right now because I have to get on the internet. I have to take care of business.
Remember when you had Henry Hyde, who talked about his youthful dalliances when he was age 40-something, when he was basically committing adultery. I can remember that because I thought, oh, that's great. I can commit youthful dalliances in my 40s and just explain it away the way that Henry Hyde did and continued his career. I mean, that's one of the things that's outrageous. You look at all the divorcees amongst the Republican, for that matter, Democratic pro-family crowd, and Newt Gingrich divorcing his wife as she lay in her hospital bed.
Didn't he get caught like putting down dollar bills down a strip or something? Maybe I dreamed this or something. He strikes me as somebody who you would run into a stripper bar.
Yeah, I think you're probably thinking Jack Ryan.
But I will not be assimilated, is what his wife said to him. he had 7 of 9 was his former wife.
Absolutely.
A Star Trek. God bless you, wherever you are, Jerry Ryan. Now,
I think he was the Borg.
He was the Borg, but Mark Foley is sort of disappointing me because he's... Oh, you got to turn that off, sweetie. He's going around saying that he got molested by a priest when he was young, and that's why he's so horned up. And I'm like, please. The problem is that... he has good taste.
Well, in 12...
He's not going after some ugly Republican like himself. He's going after some hot young thing. Well, and good for you.
Well, 12 hours earlier than that, he was playing the alcoholic card. Hello, how many times have we seen this as the excuse? Oh, I couldn't help myself.
Well, his political career is done. Yeah. So what is he going to do now?
He's avoiding criminal prosecution as best as he can. And we know that people who are rich and powerful when it comes to criminal prosecution, they're going to be sent off to the Betty Ford Clinic, whereas someone who's caught doing the same thing, you know, who's working class, is going to serve time in prison. I mean, look at what happened with Rush Limbaugh and his drug problem. You know,
yeah, and
you just say
made
a few,
today, you know?
You say a few mea culpas and you're back on the air.
So do you think he's going to, Mark Foley going to put out a book in 5 years and go on Oprah and say he's a gay American? And
well, he's already saying that.
He's actually using the words gay American?
Yeah, he's using the gay word. That was today's news. He's trying to curry favor within the gay community as defense.
Gay.
Well, no, it's pathetic. It. You look at the Democratic governor of New Jersey. What's his name? Just a few
McGreevy.
McGreevy. Thank you.
With the name even.
Who say I am a gay American?
And he gets a really nice mansion and a hot Australian boyfriend. What's up with that?
Well, I mean, the fact is,
he
the guy
be living
was selling
in an SRO.
He was selling jobs for sex. It had nothing to do with being gay. But when he got into trouble, he looked to the gay community for help. Not unlike the way that O.J. Simpson all of a sudden became black when he was in trouble. I mean, it's really disgusting that these people who gave nothing to their communities for so many years turn around and then look for the defense from those communities when they get
in. What else are they going to do?
Well, it's pathetic. I mean, the point is that the respective communities have got to reject them and say, where were you when we needed you? Where were you, you know, not denouncing your own party for some of the anti... Now, I understand he did vote against the constitutional amendment last time around, but things
he
like the Defense of Marriage Act
and
so
forth.
He
actually scored on the 80... He was around... I mean, he scored 80% or higher... for the Human Rights Campaign Fund.
Yeah, well,
he was pro-choice and pro-gay legislation.
That's the same outfit that endorsed Lieberman, so I don't take those scores with a, you know, Kellogg.
So it was bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can remember they gave Al Gore a high score, and Al Gore, when he was a senator, was in favor of every anti-gay nasty piece of legislation that came down the pike when he was senator.
And his wife was one of the people who got into a huge
Tipper.
Fight. Because of the explicit lyrics whole thing. And, you know, this is an interesting little side note, is Dee Snider of Twisted Sister was the band that Tipper Gore and Al Gore went after because of their explicit...
Now you're talking popular culture, and I'm pretty much a zero.
You're like, huh?
Department.
But interesting enough, Dee Snider turned around and endorsed Al Gore for his presidency.
You know, that's a case of self-hatred if I ever heard it.
Well, I mean, as gay people, are we sort of caught between a rock and a hard place when it comes to politics in general?
Well, I think our community, we've been selling ourselves short. And mind you, our political leaders bear as much blame for this as anyone. But I look at our political organizations who repeatedly endorse candidates who fail to even say that we should have equal legal rights, let alone all the other things that our community needs, and they're turning around endorsing these people. I mean, where is now going around and endorsing, for example, candidates who would oppose equal rights for women? They don't. They have some principles.
But even gay people are sort of like confused and
but it's self-hatred
to women's rights.
But what I'm saying is now would not endorse a candidate who's opposed to legal equality for women. The NAACP, the Urban League, whatever you want to say about them, they would not lower themselves so as to endorse a candidate who's opposed to equal rights for African Americans. And yet we as gay people here in the 21st century persist in allowing our political organizations to endorse candidates who are opposed to our legal equality. And my legal equality should be just the bare minimum of what we demand. I mean, there's many other things.
We
like
want
decent-
to be embraced. We want those hot 16-year-old lacrosse players from the South to be happy to be hanging out with us arm in arm.
Well,
it's
at
like,
least
you know,
those 16-year-old lacrosse players should be able to be out of the closet when they're in school and not face
absolutely
violence. I mean, the situation with sex education in this
what's
country,
pathetic.
It's well, just, it's gone backwards, can you believe it, since you and I were young.
So let's talk about Iran.
Yes.
Because you, beforehand, before we taped the show, you were sort of talking about Sam Kosha, who's going to be here this Friday in Chicago at the Gerber Hart Library at 1127 West Granville. And you could find out, if you want to go to the Matthew Shepard March, which is going to be Saturday at Saturday.
Saturday, 8 p.m. at
what date of the week? What
Saturday the 7th?
The 7th of October.
October 7th.
So that's like 2 days from now, people. So if you want to go, I'm going to be there. Will you be there? You can. It's going to be a meet and greet sort of the festivals.
Lots of 17-year-old lacrosse players.
Lots of hot young lacrosse players will be there, and they'll be politically active and savvy. It's a good place to pick up young guys, and they'll be walking up and down the street on Clark Street. So there'll be some hot guys there, you know, sort of who are on the fence. And because it's bars, you know the whole thing about the difference between a straight guy and a gay guy is a six pack of beer, and there you have all the ingredients you need for lots of loving.
Seriously, though, it's designed not only to commemorate Matthew Shepard's murder, but to point to real problems our community faces today. We've got a guy by the name of Kerry Cross who is gay bashed in Oak Lawn. And listen to this. Oak Lawn.
When did this happen?
This happened in the spring of this year. He was gay bashed in a Catholic church at an after-hours function. It was a social function. He was severely...
Was it Irish? It was Irish Catholic.
Well, St. Linus Church down there in Oak
Lawn. You
know,
you got to keep the booze out of those events. Because I think that's really where this
yeah,
is
there
going,
was
know?
Booze at that event, but booze or no booze, Shit. No one deserves to have the crap beaten out of them, and that's what happened to Kerry.
I don't go to Catholic churches when there's drinking involved, especially yeah. Irish Catholic, as sexy as they may be. So Sam Kosha is going to be here on Friday, and he is the leader of the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization, which is not to be confused with the BLO, which is the Barbie Liberation Organization, a real organization, by the way. That my good friend Igor Vamos. Oh, I think he's supposed to be. I don't think he's supposed to know. People are supposed to know that's him. But anyways.
Uh-oh.
But so the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization is based out of Canada or is based out of Iran?
It's based internationally. Sam is actually on the board. There's several board members.
Are there people in Iran actually working for gay rights?
Yes.
And
yes,
how do they
are.
Get keep from getting killed?
Well, they have to organize underground. There's actually a great tradition right around the world, particularly in third world and less developed countries where people are facing military dictatorships or whatever, of people actually organizing politically underground, i.e., you can't do things in public in the main because you'll get arrested, beaten up, or killed.
So no circuit parties.
No circuit parties, but they did
which,
July.
You know, you sometimes have to count your blessings.
Yeah, but they you know, you read an interview with Sam Kosha yeah. in the past issue of the Chicago Free Press, there is people do have a social life. It's difficult, it's dangerous, but people in Iran who are LGBT do what they can. Now, many people decide that just they can't deal with the threat of violence, and so they emigrate, as did Sam and others. But the fact is, on July 19th of this year, when people commemorated the one-year anniversary of the executions of a pair of gay teenagers in Iran, they not only had demonstrations right around the world, including here in Chicago, but in Iran itself, the gay and lesbian Iranians organized protests. Now, they were not public affairs because, again, there was the threat of arrest and violence and the rest of it. But you can organize even in very difficult circumstances, something that people, I think, in this country really don't have a full appreciation of. And it's not just Muslim countries also. Mm-hmm. We're going to be having, at the Shepherd March on Saturday, we're going to be having a video presentation showing the repression of pride marches in Eastern Europe, quote-unquote Christian countries.
The Polish, hot Polish countries.
Hot Polish countries, Serbia.
I can't wait to see that presentation.
Moscow. But we've got...
Russian and Polish gay men... Yeah, you know, trying to do the best they can.
We've got...
God bless... You know, for those of you listeners out there who are in Russia and Poland, I'm sending you lots of love, babies. Because, I mean, and so we're going to see a whole thing right
at
outside?
At the Shepherd Rally.
Is that going to be at 7-Eleven?
Yeah, that's right. In the 7-Eleven parking lot, we're going to have a huge video screen display.
I'm excited about that.
And I think it should bring... We've got pictures of what happened to Kerry Cross. So, hey, it's not just something that happened abroad. It's something that happens right around the world. You got a problem with anti-gay violence. And we think that very much connected up with it is the unequal rights for our community. I mean, we look at the history history of anti-African American violence, and it's no accident that the height of that violence coincided with legalized segregation and other racial discrimination. So when the government, when the church leaders and so forth say it's okay to be anti-gay through legislation or church teachings or whatever, that also spurs the extra legal violence that we see all over the place. Unfortunately, people in very difficult circumstances, far more difficult than any of us here can conceive of, are organizing against it, whether in Moscow or in Serbia or in Iran and so forth. And we're going to be bringing up some of that because there are things that people can do here in the city of Chicago. For example, when the president of Poland came to Chicago a few months ago, our own Richard M. Daley feted him. This is a man who is in the business of shutting down pride parades and arresting people, allowing fascist thugs to attack gay people.
Oh, Richard M. Daley shut down several gay bars on the night that he was welcoming the gay people to Chicago at the gay games in Soldier Field.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. But
yes, he did.
Well,
they were saying they were over capacity. And I'm like, do you really go around sports bars on the day that they win the Cubs game?
Yeah,
and shutting them, them down because they're over capacity, please.
Yeah, so basically you've got Mayor Daley was feting, you know, President Kaczynski here in Chicago. He feted George Bush, for that matter. It's disgusting.
He celebrated his birthday together. They were making out.
There was mutual admiration society. And I think all LGBT people in this town would say, is this really such the pro-gay mayor that we believe he is? I mean, people with these kind of disgusting anti-gay records should be given the cold shoulder. And we organized a protest against Kaczynski. It got worldwide coverage. Certainly, we could use a lot more people out there joining us. And if people who want to get involved in this sort of thing, I'd suggest they just visit our website, www.gayliberation.org, and you can find out everything about the Shepherd March and so forth.
And there'll be it's a great way to meet people. I think it's important as gay people to educate ourselves. It's not just a matter of coming out of the closet and going to a gay bar and finding a boyfriend and so on. You sort of have to educate yourself. And these kind of events are really great places to meet people who have sort of done their homework, and to be around like-minded peers, and to really to understand and embrace who you are as a gay and lesbian person. And for those of you who are straight people who listen to the show, participate in these things, because you also need to educate yourselves. Because we're in the 21st century, and there's no reason to be ignorant about these things. You have to go out there and go to these events, because it's fun, first of all. It's a blast. I mean, it's a really cool thing to do.
It is fun. It is fun standing up for yourself. But I think
it's fun. I mean, it's also it's something really important to do for your community. It's important to do because it makes you more aware about what's going around you politically. And it's something. Politics is really about people interacting together.
Well, and if you don't stand up when other people are attacked, sometime they're going to get around to you. And I'd say this to gay people as well, that when other communities are being attacked, whether it's Arab Americans, African Americans, or whomever, that it's important for our community to not only say, oh, that's bad, but actually get out on the streets in solidarity with other organizations who are organizing against discrimination against other communities. Because if we don't lend that kind of active solidarity to other people, how can we expect it for our own community when we really need it? A lot of people supported us when Matthew Shepard was murdered. We've got to extend that same kind of support.
We got to do that for someone else. So what advice do you have for Clay Aiken? Did you see the whole thing?
Come out, Clay.
Well, he said he was quoted, it would not make any sense for me to come out. What do you think he's saying when Diane Sawyer was so smart? You know, she didn't ask him, are you gay or not? Because everybody knows. Well, I don't know. You know, everybody is speculating. Nobody has very few people feel that Clay Aiken is a heterosexual man.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people in denial also.
There's a lot of denial there. And his fans are, mother, you know, his mom, his, for one.
Yeah.
But when Diane Sawyer says, are you ready to come out as a gay person? Or is this the week you're going to talk about being gay?
Because I want the scoop.
I want the scoop. And he goes, so, which I thought that was the most bizarre.
The Wicked Witch of the West laugh.
Very Margaret Hamilton.
Okay.
Is that the right actress? That was the one who played the... Well, anyways. And he said it wouldn't make any sense for me to come out. What do you say to gay people everywhere who say, I just don't, you know, there's no benefit for me as a person to come out of the closet. Not even to participate in a march, but just, you know... I'm going, and the internet allows me to go on Manhunt, or gay.com or whatever to get my dick, my hole filled. And then, you know, everything else is business as usual. What do you say to those people?
Well, I think there's an underestimated value of gaining your own self-esteem and self-respect and honesty. It makes you so much more powerful. Now, to people who are already in pretty powerful positions, yes, Clay Aiken, et cetera.
Clay Aiken's in a powerful position.
I've really got very little to say to people like Clay Aiken because they're sitting pretty already. They're wealthy. They're powerful. These are not the people who are going to lead our civil rights movement any more than the Clarence Thomases are going to lead the civil rights movement for African Americans. That I believe that the history of grassroots struggle is precisely that. It's coming from regular folks. Even a close look at the history of the civil rights movement in the South shows it was led more from the pews than the pulpits. In fact, when Martin Luther King began to start his Birmingham campaign, some three-quarters of African-American ministers in that town signed a petition asking him not to launch that campaign. So the true history of people's movements for freedom has never been led by the wealthy and powerful. And Martin Luther King was an exception to the rule in terms of the clergy. It was really led by black parishioners, and actually the true history of the movement shows that at critical junctures, it was African-American youth, people who were not even teenaged years, who were leading the movement, who were the vanguard of the fight for equal rights in the South. And for our community to say that we're going to be freed by Democratic Party or Republican Party, gay or lesbian Congress people is ridiculous. That's never the way that freedom has won. They've won those positions by basically selling out their own community to side with their class, to side with their party against the rest of us. That's the only way you get to those kind of powerful positions in politics. We've got to stop looking for some gay or lesbian messiah to save us. We've got to get out the streets and do it ourselves, because this threat of constitutional amendments, while it seems to have receded for the time being somewhat, it could come back in very nasty circumstances. What happens during the next recession? What happens when these wars in the Middle East continue to go south? Some people are going to start looking for scapegoats, and they could very well be us. So if we don't start organizing for our own rights, we're going to get a very rude wake-up call, I'm afraid. So really, the history is in
our own
hands.
Take a breath, baby. So what was it? I mean, it's like Elton John is saying it's nobody's business whether someone's gay or lesbian, and I say it is our business to know what, if you're singing out love songs, if you're in a position of power, it is our business.
Yeah,
especially if you're in a situation where you're going around saying that, you know, being gay or is comparing being gay to being getting your hands caught in a cookie jar. If you're making negative comparisons to right. people who are out or to any kind of sexuality that is a part of the, you know, I hate saying the word normal, but it's part of society. I mean, gay sexuality is part of society. Like it or not, it's here to stay. It's always been here. It'll always be here.
And the other side makes an issue of it. I mean, yeah, most LGBT folk would just want to go through life and not be bothered. But sorry, the other side is making an issue of it. So too bad if we come out and say, damn it, there's nothing wrong with being gay. I mean, the early gay movement said, glad to be gay. Not unlike the Black Power movement said, black is beautiful. This is not something to be ashamed of. The problem is the society that hates us for who we are. That's the sickness in society, whether we're being African-American, Latino, what have you. And so, you know, when people like Elton John say stuff like that, I'm just thinking, hello, this man's just trying to get even more wealthy by being Mr. Crossover Appeal.
Sister,
I'm so over
please.
It.
What does he have to get? Well, he's got a lot of credit card bills to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, Aretha, just because you're famous doesn't mean you're rich. And Aretha Franklin is still busy selling Pizza Hut. Mm-hmm. You know, deliver me. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on our show today. Andy Thayer is the one of the caciques, honchos of the Gay Liberation Network.
Yes.
Is it right? And this Friday from 7 to 9 at the Gerberhardt Library, 1127 West Granville, is going to be Sam Kosha, the leader of the Persian Gay and Lesbian Organization, the PGLO, which I love the name, by the way, talking about the fight for gay rights in the Middle East. And on Saturday, more important, well, not important, but this is the thing to go to, is the Matthew Shepard March for
LGBT freedom.
Let's just say freedom.
There you go.
They love us for our freedom. And it's going to be on the corner of Halsted and Roscoe. All the fun begins at 8 o'clock. Don't miss the fabulous movie with hot Eastern European and Russian
lacrosse
players. But also, you know, the I'm sure there's going to be some pretty faces up on that screen.
I bet.
I don't want to see. You know, please, you know, just tone down all the graphic nasties.
Yes, we are.
Because I'm just like, I just get that, you know, I know how awful it is. And it's like, it just depresses the hell out of me. I want to see hot young lacrosse players. That'll get me out in the streets.
There you go, Fausto.
That motivates me, Andy. Okay, here's that. Speaking of hot lacrosse players, we got a letter here from Dave Pennett, who writes, Hola, chico. Seeing as I know how much you like saying Lake Titicaca on the show, I thought I'd send you this postcard from Lake Titicaca. Oh, my God. He's actually... Isn't that beautiful? He has some sort of a...
Cute.
Ethnic person on a boat, and that's Lake Titicaca. I have no idea where it is, but...
Isn't that Mexico?
It's in La Paz.
Oh,
it's in South America.
No, that's Peru.
Peru. So I've been able to listen to the show on the road. It's a real shame, given the long bus journeys in this part of the world. The men here are short and exotic, which is always a good combination, which goes to prove no matter where you live, there are always hot men to fight for the liberation of. And hot women, too. And trannies. And for those who just can't make up their minds, one day they're a man, one day they're a woman. Anyways, we hope this card finds you well, and... we hope to catch up with the Feast of Fools when I return to New Zealand. Love to Mark Felian, your husband, and the Feast of Fools gang, Dave Panett. And we love you, Dave, for sending us this fantastic postcard. And we want to do a shout out to Archer, who listens to the show, and my gal pal Art Johnson at Sidetracks, which just... Did you know that, Andy?
Yes.
They won the best gay bar in the entire United States. Here in old Chi-town loving people. And really, Sidetracks, as awful as sometimes it is to be in a bar, it's so popular. It is packed. It's like the Mall of America of gay bars. There's just like... It's just like three stories, three buildings of just homosexual... You can't spit without hitting a sissy, honey. You can't. And we want to do a shout out to Archer, who works there, who serves up drinks, who listens to our show every single day, and to Art Johnson, who loves... He's a very educated...
I understand he likes gay people, yeah.
He likes gay people a lot. But I think, you know, Art Johnson is somebody who doesn't get enough kudos because he's a bar owner.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say bar owners are drunks, for the most part.
Yeah, I don't think they stay in business if they're drunk too
much.
Well,
you know, they're people who are just having a happy coincidence that they're doing well, you know. It's like Art Johnson is somebody who gets out there, puts his heels to the ground, and really supports the community and does tons of stuff. For not just for gay and lesbian people, but for people of all kinds. And when Oprah ever needs a location shot, she's in front of Sidetracks. Did you know that? Or Sidetrack, actually.
Yes.
See, that's the thing. I'm always like, is it Sidetracks or Sidetrack?
Singular.
It's singular. What's up with that?
It's sort of like the third rail. It's singular.
The third rail. What? Explain that to me.
Well, that's sort of like the L, the third rail, the electrified rail,
oh,
as opposed to the two boring rails. Yeah.
Oh, is that the idea behind the name Sidetrack?
I don't know. I mean, you have to ask Art.
But he won't tell me. I always run into him at Starbucks, and he's always like, it's a secret. I was like, what's that supposed to mean?
No, he's being coy.
He is. He's a very sweet man. Yeah. So we want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. It's my pleasure.
The Feast of Fools is brought to you by listeners like you. Getting a t-shirt from us helps to pay for our production costs. Thank you for your support. And today's show is also brought to you by Showtime. Meet Dexter Morgan. He's dysfunctional.
He's psychopathic.
He's a serial killer.
And he's one of the good guys. Showtime presents the killer new series, Dexter, that the Chicago Sun-Times calls fantastic, a classic in the making.
And People Magazine gives it 4 stars. Sunday, see it for free on the Showtime free preview.
By day, Dexter Morgan is a handsome, likable forensic investigator for Miami Homicide.
But by night, he dispenses a special kind of justice. Dexter, Sunday at 10, 9 central, only on Showtime.
To subscribe, call 1-800-SHOWTIME or go to SHO.com.
And if you want to visit more, learn more about GLBT and some other letters too, I'm sure that they're going to add more letters. Like in 10 years from now, it's going to be like 26
letters.
All 26
choose
letters. Alphabet writes, we're going to have, if you want to learn more about it, visit the website.
www.gayliberation.org.
That's gayliberation.org. And if you want to visit our website, visit feastoffools.net or comment. Well, yeah, it's the best way to comment is visit our website, feastoffools.net, or send us an email, feastoffools@gmail.com. Oh, it is your turn to feel the burn, the fire.